So a really warm welcome to everybody.
Yeah.
We didn't scare them all away with our last class.
Yeah, it's a good sign when people come back for more. Gluttons for wise speech.
Yeah, we'll just give a few moments for people to continue to arrive. And then just open momentarily. Yeah, I see some of you this might be the first class, and welcome. Yeah, so I know this is not easy for everyone to join all four classes and that we offer. And that's why we do have recordings for you to catch up. And so as we begin to get today, we just want to maybe do a quick review of what we did in the first class. And then open for some comments and sharing and questions. So the first class, we shared a couple of things. We had shared an overview of our class, and it spoke about cultivation of conditions that are conducive for wise speech, mindfulness on and off cushion, mindfulness internally, externally, and both, and cultivating wholesome qualities of a heart and mind, and also listening, really listen to ourselves, listen to others. A big part of communication is to listen. And so we wanted to just open the floor up and to see if anyone have questions, comments, and we also shared some sutta codes. And if you have read the sutta codes, and if there's something that bubbles up in you, so please use your Zoom hand if you know how to do that. And otherwise, you can raise your physical hand. We may have to scroll the screens a little bit to see you. Yeah, anyone? Okay, Aditi.
Yeah, thank you, Ying. I tried listening, but I have noticed sometimes when I'm trying to listen, there is a energy movement within me to not listen, especially when the other person is trying to move in a direction that I'm not in, a space that I'm not able to stay in. And, you know, I don't want to be harsh on myself. So I want to hear from you, like, what do we say to ourselves in the moments that we don't want to listen?
It's a great question. Yeah, so there are those movements inside of us that may kind of want to go in certain ways. I think what you pointed out, that you just noticed that this movement is happening, is already creating some space for you to begin to tune in what might be possible here. And so that's, the first step is to begin to open up and to see what's happening inside of us and tune in to it. And I wanted to invite some of my co-teachers to see if and there are some shares from any of you.
Well, I see Diana also.
You go, go, Kim.
Okay. I'll just say one, we'll do it like a breakout group where we get to add different things. One thing I have done is try to label what's going on in my mind when I feel myself starting to kind of pull away. Sometimes it's because I have heard the person say this before, and I know where they're going with it, and I know how it's all going to unfold. And so I labeled that in myself as impatience. I don't feel like I want to stay with this process that I know is unfolding. So sometimes it helps to have the right word, and then that gives my mind some interest, like labeling it. Okay, is this impatience? Is it irritation? Sometimes I find my mind is actually in a wholesome state and I'm pulling away, and what's left when I do that is compassion. So sometimes just, this is really just a variation on what, or a further definition on what Ying said of turning toward what's going on for you. And that keeps you engaged in the present moment while still being in the presence, yeah, of what's going on.
And I read Debbie shared something here also. And she said, thank you. I noticed this movement, a walk with a friend after our Saturday class. I struggled, then breathed into the movement, a moment. So I tune in to the embodied aspect of our being. I can kind of create a little space from the habitual tendencies of a jumping out. So tuning to the breath or movements in the body, sensations in the body. And those are maybe some of the pointers to explore. So another question, Christine, that may be the last one.
Thank you. I was looking up the Pali translation of wise speech, and I'm guessing it's like samavaka, and I was trying to look up what that word means, and I still, Pali dictionaries, apparently there's a lot of them, and some of them say that it means like word or sentence, and so I was wondering like if that's a relationship, because like back then they didn't have other means of transmitting words or sentences, and that's why we're able to expand the definition. And if that's in general how modern interpretations of suttas go, like where we have to adapt a lot of these words to our modern means, and what's the boundary of which we can draw with that?
Great question. Yeah. I looked it up, and Vaka had in the dictionary, Pali dictionary had meanings of utterance, words, and I suspect that this is quite quite a rich also in just the translation of this word itself. And since we don't know the culture of where this language is coming from, and it is somewhat, you know, based on how we relate to this translation. So I'd like to invite our Pali scholars here. Maybe Diana, Kim, or David can say some more about the Pali words.
Maybe I'll just add this. Vacha is, if we think back in ancient India, words and speech were the same because there is no reading. There's nothing written down. There was other times, but not really in the Buddhist culture. So there was some writing, but so it's just for them, there wasn't a difference. Of course, word was speech because that's like, and they weren't necessarily thinking about words in the mind. So there wasn't a difference between the two. I think that's part of the way we can understand it.
And I would just add to that, that I just looked it up on the Etymology Online Dictionary, and there's some idea that it seems a common notion among etymologists that the word speech also comes from a Euro-Indian background, that it refers to a scattering of words. So it may be there in our word speech as well.
Thank you for the question. So with that, I will move into the first teaching, and Kim, please take it away.
All right, thank you. So today is devoted to some somewhat traditional teachings about wise speech, so that we can kind of move through the material that you may have recognized, you may recognize from other things you've heard related to wise speech. So we'll talk about some lists that you may have heard in other talks, but I have two hopes about moving into this topic today. One is that I hope you'll gain some clarity about the Buddha's framing of wise speech. So he's actually not just giving us lists or rules or check boxes. Let's see, true, beneficial, timely, check, check, check. You know, these things, which is often how we approach it. But there's actually kind of a wholeness or a harmony to the Buddha's approach to wise speech. And I hope you'll see it as we go through some of these kind of traditional expressions of it. And then I hope that you'll also sense that wise speech is meant to be both interesting and easeful. I see a lot of harsh self-criticism of ourselves about our speech, which might not be wise speech. So maybe sensing into the wholeness of wise speech practice includes some of that gentleness and non-divisiveness within our own being about how we're speaking. And then also, I just want to acknowledge that some of these topics that we're going through in this class in general might be a little challenging for our mind. There are ways in which when we learn about ethical practices in particular, our mind has a relationship to them where we, you know, we kind of don't want to be told what to do. And so there's a little reaction in our being where we look for exceptions and we look for ways in which we want to complexify things instead of just settling in with them, which is good in the spirit of inquiry. And there's also this opportunity for reflection on what's going on in ourselves with that. So it's all interesting. I find ethics to be a wonderfully rich practice exactly because it gives such a tremendous mirror into what's going on in my own mind and body. And maybe we can also remember the bigger scheme in which we learn ethical practices, which is that they support the cultivation of the mind and the cultivation of wisdom in the end. Okay, so the two main actions that are today's theme are avoiding and cultivating, you know, around speech. Okay, so these, of course, are, we maybe frame them as things to do less of and things to do more of in how we communicate. You might recognize these as generally the components of wise effort, which is about orienting the mind toward the wholesome and away from the unwholesome. So, you know, generally the mind wants to move away from or let go of things that are leading toward dukkha, toward suffering in some way, and to orient itself toward and to kind of support and do more of things that are leading us toward wholesome happiness. And so we can kind of put that lens onto speech and communication in general. So that's the framing today. And I was given the task of talking about avoiding. And then David will talk about cultivating later. So so within each of these broad categories of avoiding and cultivating, the Buddha named two other categories. So one is the content of our speech, that is what we are talking about. So that's the usual thing that we think of with speech is, you know, the subject. What are we talking about? What's going on? What is, you know, the idea that we want to convey? But in addition, we can easily recognize that there's also the mode, how it is that we're talking. you know, how it is that we're choosing those words. And in addition, a whole set of other things about how our body is, how our tone of voice is, how the pace of our speech is. And this is not to get you all tangled up, but just I just want to distinguish those two different ideas of the mode and the content. I hope it's clear enough. So these operate differently in how we go about working with speech. We would generally treat the mode of speech, how we're speaking, first. You know, we want to speak in a skillful or a wholesome way of approaching things. And then further, as a refinement, there are some topics, some content of speech that are more or less likely to support skillful speech. I hope that framing makes sense. I think it will become clearer as we unfold it. But so the Buddha talked, you know, I'm sort of saying all of this in that this gives us an introduction to how the Buddha framed his direct teachings on wise speech. So some of them are about the mode and some are about the content. And so when he talked about unskillful ways of speaking, so unskillful modes, if you will, those are the ones that we would want to avoid. And I'll talk about a fairly famous list of them, which won't be, I think it will be recognizable. So first of all, we want to avoid speech that is just outright false. So saying things that we know not to be true. And, you know, the actual example given in the text is about being brought into a court of law and asking, you know, do you know, and having some, and then the person says that they don't when they actually do, or they do when they actually don't, you know, so things like this are, you know, just blatant deception in the mind. So we want to avoid that mode of speaking, you know, as an approach to speech. We'll give some examples of these going forward. But then there's also harsh speech. So speech that is cutting or painful. It's described in ways like that, where the feeling that it brings is going to be one of kind of violence or pushing in some way. So we wouldn't want to speak in that tone, partly because that just defeats the purpose of getting across what it was that we were trying to say. You know, that mode is just not well received. And then there's also speech that is divisive or slanderous is another way of translating it. So speech that is designed to create division. This is actually more common than we think. Subtle ways of us versus them speech. The example given is something like a person says something here that will divide them from those people there, or they go over there and say things that will divide from people here. So it almost has a sense of, you know, bottom of the hill, top of the hill, you know, going, and a person is going between them trying to divide those two groups. But this happens in many subtle ways. One of my favorite terms bonding through mutual outrage. And most people, maybe it takes a moment to understand that. So this is the kind of speech where we say, can you believe how horrible that person is? And the other person says, I know, they're just horrible. It's just terrible how this is happening. I know, the whole world is, right? And so you have bonded with somebody else over how horrible this other group / person / thing is. And it's a subtle form of divisive speech. Of course, it feels good in the moment. We may be speaking about genuine suffering that's being brought about. And so it's, you know, we want to acknowledge these things, but as a form of connection, this is considered not in the long run leading to a skillful, wholesome connection with someone. So this is an area where we might watch our speech. Okay, and then there's the fourth area. So we have false, harsh, divisive. And then there's this area of idle chatter or gossip or not meaningful speech. And we see this a lot also. Sometimes people worry, oh, well, what about, you know, I'm on the bus and I'm just chatting about the weather with the person next to me. That's okay. That because it, you know, may be fine because it's creating a simple, you know, just hello, are you there? Yes, I'm here, you know, kind of connection with another person. So, you know, we need to distinguish some nuance here. We're going to talk a lot more about nuance, by the way, in future sessions, but we need to lay out this framework first. So we want to generally abstain, though, from the kind of speech where there's really genuinely nothing going on and it's just filling space. It's just rattling off kind of habitual things that we run through. We can feel in our own mind when we're speaking about light topics with a genuine interest in connecting to a person, and when we're just speaking because it fills the air and, you know, we want to, I don't know, we want to say something. So maybe it helps to know that the Pali word for this kind of speech is like an onomatopoeia, you know, sounds like what it is. So the Pali word for idle chatter is sampa palapa, which Bhante Gutaratana translates as blah, blah, blah. Sampa palapa, blah, blah, blah. So you can get it, right? So this is generally not, you know, you can feel that this is not the skillful kind of speech. So then these are the four modes. So we would take care first with the way that we're speaking, how we're manifesting speech, if you will. And then the Buddha further offered that there are certain realms of speech, topics, now we're into the content side, that are less conducive to being able to avoid these unskillful modes, or they're kind of, you know, more likely to spiral off into conversations that are not supportive for our practice. So I want to name them because they're a little bit humorous in some ways because they're a little culturally specific, but I would encourage you to kind of translate into how they manifest for us because there are relationships. Okay, so, and you'll get this sutta later. So it says, conversation about kings, robbers, and ministers of state, armies, alarms, and battles, food and drink, clothing, furniture, garlands, and scents, relatives, vehicles, villages, towns, cities, the countryside, women and heroes, the gossip of the street and the well, tales of the dead, motley tales about the creation of the world and of the sea, talk of whether things exist or not. Okay, so we might not want to take that literally, but, you know, really, I especially like gossip of the well. Has anyone talked at the water cooler at work? conversation about kings, robbers, and ministers of state. Interesting that those three go together. But, you know, this is essentially politics, discussion of what people are doing, who's doing what, talk about likes and dislikes, you know, the latest fashions. Do you have the new iPhone yet? Have you updated to Windows 11? Do you like it? You know, these kinds of things. Not that we should never talk about these things. That's why I've been so careful about how to frame content and mode and so forth. It's not that there are areas that are cut off from what we can say, but we need to be careful when we're talking about these topics that we don't slip into things that are unskillful forms of speech. So just take a little extra care. I couldn't help noticing that these are essentially the contents of a newspaper. You know, it's what the newspaper is about. But that kind of news may not be the most important news. So we just have to be careful. Okay, so then maybe the last thing, we'll just kind of step back a little bit and mention that avoidance as a concept doesn't exactly mean always that we're not doing any of those things, we're pulling back. There'd also just be kind of a general letting go of our attachment to these kinds of things, to getting wrapped up in them, to pursuing them as things that are important in and of themselves. And of course, if we find ourselves in any one of the unskillful modes of speech, we find that we're getting harsh, we're engaging in bonding through mutual outrage. Well, we go back to MN61. Oh, is what I'm, the way I'm speaking leading to harm? Is it unskillful? Oh, just stop. Stop in the middle while you realize that you've gotten into one of these, just redirect and let go. And that's part of avoidance. So then, so I hope this gives kind of a framing of how the Buddha encouraged us to consider the realm of speech. And then within that, we have things that are, we would want to do less of, and later we'll talk about things to do more of. And that will give us the general framing today, so that classes 3 and 4 coming up, we're going to then delve into some of the nuance and the more less typical suttas that talk about speech. So I hope that gives you kind of an idea of the ongoing richness of this topic. Okay, so I'll stop there. And I think Diana's going to help us talk about this amongst ourselves.
Thank you, Kim. I was enjoying your talk, and then at the last minute I realized, oh, wait, I'm supposed to be, I'm next. I was, so thank you for that. Yeah, so when we heard this list from Kim, we might think, but wait, is there anything left to talk about? And we'll talk about that a little bit later, right? But there might be also this feeling of, well, how do I not do that? What are some ways in which I can do some alternatives? And again, we'll talk about cultivating, but I like what Kim said, what to do less of. So is there a way that you have learned that has been helpful for you to do less of this kind of talk that is false or harsh or divisive or slanderous or kind of this blah, blah, blah talk that doesn't help support connection? It's just, we're just speaking to just speak because we have this pressure of we want to speak or something. So we'd like to put you into some breakout groups to talk about, can you provide an example when you've been able to avoid an unskillful mode or area of speech? So part of the purpose of this breakout group is just to inspire each other about different ways to approach this, to inspire each other to think like, oh, okay, maybe that's something I can do. If you find yourself spiraling down into, yeah, I always get lost and I'm doing this or I can't like it, that's not the direction we want to go. We want this to be uplifting and a sense of, oh, okay, here's a way to engage with it. And also without giving advice to each other. Well, you really should do this or something not like that. So in order to support that, you'll be in groups around 4, it won't be exactly 4, and to do this in a spiral method. So one person says one thing of an example of when you've been able to avoid an unskillful mode or area of speech. Kim gave an example of just stopping and say, oh, wait, I think I'm not going to go down that path, and then just go a different direction just to stop in the middle and whoever's listening to you to let them know. That's one example. So one person would share one thing. The second person shares one thing. Third person shares one thing. The fourth person shares. And then it comes back around. So maybe what somebody says reminds you of something else. So at the beginning, you might feel like, I don't know, but maybe there's something that comes up. So we'll go on this spiral method. And let's go in the order of number of characters in your screen name, like including pronouns or anything you have. So if you have lots of characters in your screen name, then you'll go last. And if you have few, you'll go first. So with that, why don't we begin? I think we have a few more seconds, maybe,
and then
everybody else comes and joins us.
See some smiley faces and laughters.
Great, great. So we'd love to hear a little bit, what was that like? Were there some new ideas, some aha moments? What was it like? I didn't emphasize to actually practice write speech while you were in the groups, but maybe you felt like, okay, here's an opportunity for me to practice. So, Jerry.
Sorry, I couldn't get my mouse over the mute. At the last minute, I switched what I was going to share, and it was about admitting shamefully that I could see over the years, if not over a lifetime, that I used to engage regularly and mindlessly in divisive speech. It's sort of embarrassing. And that my most recent example was right there in the group where I was going to start by complaining that I didn't like the subject and that I would approach it differently, which I didn't do. But what I did do is use that as an example of how I refrained from divisive speech. So that, I'm not saying that because to pat myself on the back, but one participant did a quiet one of, you know, this, and someone else thanked me. And my feeling part of the group was much more satisfying than wondering why no one responded to what I said. So that it was really a win-win situation. I felt connected, whereas divisive speech, nobody knows what to say, and you know they move on to somebody else, and you feel, and I feel like crap after that. So there was an aha moment here. So I was quite grateful for the assignment, even if I didn't like it originally.
Thank you, Jerry. So often that works out too, right? Like, oh, I don't want to do this. And then we find out, there's something helpful there. Bill.
One person in our group mentioned how when he says something's not so skillful, it may feel good at the moment, but later it doesn't feel good. And boy, that really hit me. I remember some times when I have just let her rip. And then later you feel really bad. And then I thought, and what if, you know, I really put the person in his place, just really marshal all my intellect to really do that well. And then what if I never see the person again? Then that moment will be the last memory that that person has of me. So what a legacy, right?
Thank you, Bill. Yeah, pointing to regret, remorse, as well as putting in a bigger context out of just that moment. Maybe there's a little heat in that moment too when we find ourselves doing this. Yeah.
And I would just add to that, and thank you both, Bill and the other question, Jerry, just for, you know, sharing these things in our this little practice community. But I also think that there's a healthy aspect of that remorse, you know, or regret, in that it just reminds us how impactful our speech can be on ourselves, right, and our own practice, and on and on others, and on the relationships we have with others. So that's not just a negative thing. That's that acting of conscience to remind us that we want to speak skillfully and that it does have an impact in the world. So we can just keep that in mind too, that there's a positive aspect of that reminder, that urging to speak with care.
Anybody else have a comment or something they'd like to share? I wonder, Kim, if you want to share something that we were talking about in our own little breakout group when we were talking about speech, if you'd like to share something. You don't have to, but if you'd like to.
I'll be very brief because Cheryl just put her hand up, which is to say that maybe one useful metaphor, to use a phrase that's sometimes heard in our culture, is that people can be in key with each other. So this is a musical reference, but even if you don't play music, there can be the idea of, okay, let's tune into the key signature, at least, of what the conversation that we're in, and then deciding to participate in that. Jerry's example kind of fits that of staying within the framework that we offered. He realized that he could avoid divisive speech at that moment. And so this helps us balance a sense of wanting to do our own thing and be individually expressive. That's fine, but at least let's all express in the same key. And so then it will be harmonious in some way. So having rules or guidelines or, you know, lists that we're thinking about doesn't have to be constraining. There's an enormous amount of individual variation within that. But we would just want to stay in that key.
Thank you. Thank you, Kim. Cheryl.
Just something a little bit humorous, but also that was meaningful. Before we broke out into our breakouts, I thought, okay, so there's 40-some people here. Obviously, I'll never be in a breakout room with Jeff because it would just be too strange. You know, it'd be too much of a coincidence. So it's not going to happen. So the first thing that happened is our two faces popped up. So it was just, I don't know, it was just very whimsical, interesting, and probably good for speech because we have this tendency to have certain assumptions and then, you know, they get kind of put on their head. And it was very nice to be in the room with him, is what I'm saying, versus, oh, God, I hope this doesn't happen.
Nice.
It was good.
Thank you. Thank you, Cheryl. Yeah, so, you know, Zoom just does what it does. Actually, I'll just say a little bit. I don't think it's 100% random because people have reported, like, I'm often in the group with so-and-so. Yeah. I don't know how that works. I don't know that way, but I'm glad it worked out well for you.
Yes, thank you.
And maybe I'll say it's nice to see you, Cheryl. But yeah. Nice to see you, Jeff. I haven't seen you guys in person in a very long time.
Same here.
Okay, so I'll pass it on to Ying now, who's going to do the guided meditation for us.
Yeah, so let's switch our mode of learning and practicing together. And so you've heard a bit of teaching about avoiding harmful speech and from the perspective of content and mode. And so we'll do a short guided meditation to maybe explore those aspects of mode versus content. And so we actually talk to ourselves a lot, if we all notice this. And so maybe in our meditation, we'll also learn a bit about our inner voices and how we're speaking to ourselves. So if you just want to take a sitting posture that's a supportive for sitting for 10, 15 minutes. Maybe a few long deep breaths to invite yourself to be here. And whenever you're ready, you can close your eyes if you like. And just let your bodies ease into here and now. Maybe beginning by feeling the connection of the body with the chairs or the cushion, the floor. taking some care to establish a posture that's a supportive for a meditative engagement. And for some of you, that may be expressed as uplifting of torso. Or maybe it's allowing of the shoulders and arms to drop. Softening of the face. And eyes. Opening of the eyebrows. Taking a few moments. Just allow the whole being to settle. Right here. Let what wants to go down, go down. And what wants to lift up, to lift up. For some of you, maybe ready to rest your awareness on the breath or in the sensations of the body. Mindfulness of front and center. Receiving sound, movements in the body, movements of the breath. What are the thoughts? There are any forms of the inner voices coming up. Receiving them. Wide open awareness. noticing if there are any relationships you have with the inner voices, the thoughts, or emotions. Maybe there are some sense of pushing away, wishing them to go away. How are you relate to the thoughts and inner voices? Can you notice some of the modes? You're relating to those voices with the kindness or blame or criticism. Harshness. Are you relating with the tenderness, care? There are contents of the thoughts. And then there's a texture of the thoughts. It's related to the mood. How we are relating to the thoughts. Sometimes the moods are experienced in the body. Maybe there are tightness in the body. Noticing the skillful ways of relating to our inner chatter, and noticing the unskillful ways of relating. Maybe there is a sense of tightening tension in the body that can be felt, and then sending the message, allowing us to know the skillfulness versus the unskillfulness. Maybe you feel the relaxation and ease in the body. It's the last few moments of the meditation. Listen through the body from an embodied place.